Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. And we're talking about myths and legends and fallacies and ideas that people get into their head that they accept as true that prevent their growth. And another way of talking about the same thing is to talk about psychosis, because that's kind of what psychosis is all about. It's about getting ideas in your mind that prevent growth and understanding. And you know, nobody wants to think that they have a psychosis. It's got to be the other guy who has the psychosis. Nobody wants to think that they have a psychosis. But really, these are all terms and they're relative. We talked this morning about corporations. And is the United States a government, a corporation? And in 1871, there was the District of Columbia that organized like a corporation. And suddenly, now the Patriot myth is that suddenly that's when the United States became a corporation. Before that, it wasn't a corporation. Well, of course, it's been a corporation from the very beginning. You just read the Constitution. It has all the bylaws of a corporation. It shows you how to elect its leaders and where you get them from and how it sets up rules and how it will have a judiciary act and it talks about the different branches, and what it is a bunch of people acting as a single entity created by the authority of other people, which is the definition of a corporation. And of course, we've done shows before, and you can look them up on our websites, on Golem. Golem is a Jewish word that talks about this clay monster that is created. And they breathe life into it by swearing an oath. And then that clay monster goes out and does your bidding. Of course, there's all kinds of legends. And they actually made movies and now TV shows where the golem is actually a chunk of clay walking around doing things. And what a golem really is and always has been is a corporation. And they used to create these corporations on clay tablets. You would carve your agreement, you know, in different languages, in the clay, and that would be your agreement. And that was done by a multiple number of people who create this body, corporate body, to go out and do their bidding. That's not them, but it's this body. It's more than one person gathered together to create by oath an institution, and that's a golem. Now, of course, they make up stories about it and everything, and then we have these stories and myths, and they're really representing this idea of corporations going out and doing the bidding for a group of people as if that corporation was one person. And that's what we see today, and that's what a golem is, and that's what a corporation is. And a golem can do good things, but a golem can actually turn on you and do bad things and evil things. And of course, corporations can do the same thing. A corporation itself is not a bad thing. A corporation is an institution created by men, and the spirit of those men breathe the spirit into that corporation, and their spirit is what causes the corporation to do bad things, is the spirit of those who breathe life into that corporation. And the same way with the United States. The United States is a corporation. It's an institution. It was created by the states, and it was to be outside of the states in this 10 square mile area, and it was to protect our foreign borders, and it could make treaties, but its treaties were very limited in power because it would have to fulfill those treaties, and it only had a limited amount of power because of the Constitution. Now, that power has grown immensely because of agreements that people have made with the agencies of the corporation, the agencies of the United States government. They've made lots of agreements, usually to obtain benefits, sometimes just out of ignorance, sometimes out of convenience. And this has given the government more and more power. And because one of the powers that it gave it, it was to create debt, that the people who are the beneficiaries of the corporation are now responsible for the debt of the corporation. And you can't just get out of the corporation without paying the debt. You're paying your portion of the debt. And since it's an undefined, there's no division within the treasury until it's all paid, nobody can get out. There are some exceptions to that. But almost nobody can get out with stuff, although there are some statutory exceptions to that. But you're only getting out of that corporation, and usually you have to join another corporation, you know, like move to Sweden or move to Australia or move to China, and then you can join those corporations, and then you will be responsible for their debt, because they have debt too. All those countries have debt. They're all operating on debt. And so you have, you know, 270 or 300 corporations running around calling themselves countries, and they're all in debt, and they all do bad things from time to time because of the spirit of the people that have breathed life into those corporations, into those nations. So what we talked about in the first 2 hours was all the myths. Mostly we dealt with the United States. You could take these myths and find similar ones over in other countries. But we're dealing with the United States because I'm in that world. That's the world in which I live in. And so we take a look at that. And the reason we are looking at this is to help you overcome your psychosis. You see, because you have a psychosis. And it doesn't mean you're crazy. It just means that you have something blocking your perception of reality. And you can call it preconceived notions. We have preconceived notions. We think that, you know, what was it Mark Twain said? It's not what a man knows, but what a man doesn't know, but what he knows is absolutely true, that just ain't so. That's where he gets into the most trouble, is that he has certain things that he is absolutely sure that they're true, but they just ain't so. And so that's his delusion. You know, what he believes to be true is his delusion. And that delusion causes him not to go any farther. You know, it's like somebody had a hologram that showed there was a wall in front of you. And you look at it and you see a wall. And so you never try to go past the wall. Because you see, well, I can't go past there. There's this giant wall. But in reality, you could go past there because it isn't really there. It's just a projection of an obstacle that's in your way. But you don't go because you think it's there. And it's not. It's just a projection. Now, are you crazy? Well, no, there's an actual hologram there, but you could pass your hand through. It's not real. So you have evidence that there's a wall there because of the reflective view that you see of that wall there, hologram projected out in front of you. And that adds to a belief in your mind that there is a wall there. You know, with atoms and molecules and bricks, and you can't get past that because you believe that it's there. And you believe it's there because of a limited amount, something that is actually projected there that is true, that projection, but the reality of that projection is it's not a real wall. But you can't tell. You just can't see. But you're only relying on what your eyes are telling you. You're not actually going up and touching. If you went up and touched it, your hand would pass right through the wall. So this is how psychosis works, is it gets you to believe something to be true that isn't really true. And you act upon what you believe to be true that is not really true. But the same result as if there really was a wall takes place because you never attempt to pass through. So what I'm going to suggest is that you need to take a closer look. You need to look at this wall with your other senses, not just your visual senses, because your visual senses is incomplete. It looks like a wall, but it doesn't touch, feel like a wall. You know, it doesn't smell like a wall. it isn't a wall. It's just a projection of one. So if we, now we take that little story, that little kind of metaphor, and we take a look at other things in our life, and we see what is stopping us from progressing to the next level, to growing to another level, and keeping us hemmed in. See, the word psychosis, it comes from a psychosis, which actually means animation, from the Greek word give life to. So when you give life to a corporation, you create a corporation, you breathe life into it. Two or more people gather together for a particular purpose, and with an agreement, they create this corporation, an entity, and they breathe life into it. And according to the United States Constitution, 14th Amendment, they actually accept that corporation as if it was a person, a U.S. person. Now, some people say, oh, that's not right, and all that stuff. Well, don't people have a right to make agreements? And if they all agree to operate a corporation as if it was one person, they have that right to do that. And it does have the rights of the individual vested into it, you know, according to the terms of the corporation. And so it's absolutely reasonable that the United States government give that corporation rights as a person, as a member of the United States, because members of the United States have created it, or people with permission to create it as if it was a member of the United States created it, and it's a foreign corporation. So the government really doesn't have a right to say you don't have the right to make that agreement, and it does have a right to say, because you're one of our citizens, we're going to accept your creation as if it's a person. Now, the problem is, and this is what we talked about in the first part of the show, is that originally the people were not a party to the Constitution. They were not citizens of the United States. They didn't have this person status as a citizen of the United States, and therefore they did not have civil rights appertaining to the 14th Amendment. They had civil rights, but they were civil rights in the most general sense. In other words, they were natural civil rights. I mean, this is what you have to realize. All rights, like all matter in the universe and all energy in the universe, exist, unless you're creating new matter out of somewhere else, that, you know, new energy. But really, everything is just, you know, changing form. Everything exists already, unless you're saying there's an ongoing creation of matter and energy. I mean, obviously, energy can turn into matter, and matter can turn into energy, but is there more or less? Or is it just, we're just seeing a transmission? And then, of course, when you deal in black holes, they talk about energy coming from another dimension into this dimension. So we haven't created energy, and we've just brought it into this new dimension. So, you know, this is all, you have to go listen to our quantum and string theory recordings and try to figure out what we're talking about. But the point is that this energy that exists may change form, but there's only so much energy that exists. So when you give life to a corporation, some of your life is invested in that corporation. You haven't created new life. You took some of your rights and you vested it in that corporation. And that's the same way it is with government. Governments have no right to exist whatsoever until people vest in that government some of their rights or their right to things. They give some of their things to that government. And then that government, that corporation, has a right to exist. because it has things to use, and maybe it has some of your rights to choose. I mean, what are rights? Rights are your right to choose. I get to choose what I do with this because I have a right over this thing. And I can give this thing to somebody else, and then that person or that corporation now has a right to decide over that thing. Now, the creation of the church, the creation of his church institution is created because people take things they have and they give to a minister, and now that minister has say-so over that thing. You know, they give him $10, and they say, well, here's $10, use this for Christ's purposes. And so now he has been instituted by your gift. He may be instituted by Christ too, but he's at least instituted by your gift to rule over this thing you gave him. But you never give him yourself to rule over. You can't give him yourself. Because he's not supposed to take that, because Christ said you're not to exercise authority one over the other. So in the creation of the church, you never give authority over yourself to someone else. You maintain that authority. What you give is the authority over things. Now, in other governments, you actually give authority over yourself. And now, how do you do that? Are you following this? In other governments, you can swear allegiance and say, I hereby swear that I will do everything my sergeant tells me to do, and his captain tells him to tell me to do. And now he can say, do 10 push-ups. And he has authority over you because you swore to obey his lawful command. And so you have to go and do 10 push-ups because you gave him the authority, because you took your right to choose whether to do push-ups or not, and you gave it to him. And now he says you have to do push-ups. It's like sergeant comes in and he says, I'm looking for 3 volunteers, you. And they say, well, we didn't volunteer. This is where you're wearing the uniform. So you volunteered, and now the sergeant's telling you what to do. He said, you volunteer at a given point, and now they have the exousia, in the Greek, what they would call the exousia, the liberty to decide for you. You had the liberty to decide before you swore that oath, but once you swore that oath, they now have the liberty to decide for you. And if you're going to remain subject to the higher liberty, you're going to have to remain subject to your original right to choose. You know, your God-given rights. But the fact is, you weren't born with all the God-given rights you would normally have capacity to have, because your parents gave some rights up before you were born. And you were not born with any more rights than your parents had. They don't have them to give to you. They can't pass them down. You can't inherit those rights from your parents because they don't have them. And I give you an example in history. When the Israelites went into bondage in Egypt, and everybody in Egypt, including the Israelites, you know, the sons of Jacob, brothers of Joseph, every one of them had to pay 1/5 of everything they produced during the year, 20%, to the government. And the government would provide them with grain and food and a place to be. But they were in bondage, and they made that agreement. And their children were in that bondage, and their children's children were in that. For 400 years, they were in that bondage. Every year, somebody was born, but he was still in that bondage because that's all the freedom they could give them. And I explained this with the pit in the last show, but now I'm giving you that analogy. And that's the way it works. Remember when the Bible tells you that the kingdom of heaven, which is when God, the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, same thing, is from generation to generation. So once you are righteous in your generations, which, you know, like Abraham was righteous in his generations, that meant that he hadn't waived his rights or invested them in a corporation. You know, you know, like we see people doing in Sodom and Gomorrah. They say, give us the people to Abraham. And he says, the people can do whatever they want. And he says, well, you can take the stuff, but give us the people, Abraham. And he says, well, I don't want to own the people, and I don't want to take the stuff. Everybody's free to go back to Sodom, or free to stay here with the altars of Abraham and be free people. And how were the altars of Abraham making people free? Well, they were actually social welfare programs. They were trusts where you pick men you trust. That's what the stones of the altar are. You look out amongst yourselves and find men you trust. They're living stones. And they gather together in a network of men. This is what they call an altar, a council of men. Same word in the Hebrew for a council of men is the same word in the Hebrew for a gathering of stones. And they fit together as they fit together. I don't know how they're going to fit together, but they have to fit together. You can't hew the stones. You can't carve them. You can't regulate them. They have to be free stones and fit together freely. Okay, now you sacrifice on that altar, free will offerings. That's charity. You give it to those men. You get to pick them. They're not elected. Every time you choose to give to that stone, that man, that's your votive offering. And if you don't like what he's doing, you stop giving to him. It's not like other governments where once you elect them, you have to give to them whether you like what they're doing or not. I mean, see, every time I see an election, somebody gets elected, and then they start doing the opposite of what they said, and everybody says, well, that's all what he said he was going to do, and you know, I shouldn't have to keep paying him. Well, you're in a different kind of government. You're not in the government established by God. You're in a government established by men, where you give your right to decide to somebody else, and now he decides for you, including your right to give. He decides how much you have to give. And he decides when you give, how often you have to give, and everything. But in a free government, you get to decide how much to give, to whom to give it, and when to give it, and when not to give it. You're not in a free government. You think you are, but that's your psychosis. See how I get back to that? You have breathed life into a government that exercises authority one over the other. You call that government a president, but he's actually just the same as a king. He's a ruler who exercises authority. Congress, same thing. Senate, same thing. And you've breathed life into that institution, and so what's going to happen? Because you've given up your right to choose. Oh, you get to vote every 4 years or every 2 years, but whoever you elect, they get to choose for you. And you don't have much say-so in it. You know, you can try to regulate them with your Constitution, but you know, the majority of the people want benefits, so they're just going to vote in somebody who will give them more and more benefits. You know, I heard somebody talking about how they thought Bernie Sanders was great. They were a feminist and they loved the idea of having a woman in the White House, and they would have voted for Hillary, but Hillary has taken big PAC money, and even though they understand that sometimes they have to do that, supposedly Bernie hasn't, although that's to be seen. But anyway, so she was going to vote for Bernie. And she was saying why she was doing it, because he was sincere and he wasn't taking all the special money and everything. And then she says, oh, I know you're talking about he's a socialist. But so what? He's a democratic socialist. What's a democratic socialist? Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's a Nazi. That's what Nazi stands for, Democratic Socialist Party. And so Hitler was a Democratic Socialist. And the problem is that whoever you make president, you're giving him power, and power corrupts. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. But she hasn't figured that out yet, and so she wants to vote for Bernie, and she's free to do so. You know, I'm not advocating voting for anybody. What I'm trying to talk about is your psychosis, that you actually think that voting is going to make a difference. And see, that's your psychosis. Again, psychosis is this, you've given animation. See, when you elect somebody, you have animated them. And one of the parts of the definition of psychosis, I've talked about it before, but it's a severe disorder in which thought and emotions are so impaired that contact is lost with external reality. Well, everybody at every convention in the United States, the reason they're there is because that's their psychosis. You know, they look at Donald Trump, they look at Ted Cruz, they look at Bernie, they look at Hillary. It doesn't really matter to me. But that's their psychosis. Their emotions and thoughts. I mean, that's why, you know, Trump, he appeals to the emotions. He says things that people want to hear. Because they're fed up. And they're upset. And so he says that, and their thought and emotion support him. And they lose track of the external reality. But the same can be said for the other party, and I don't want to favor one over the other. I mean, I've actually heard people say they want Hillary because she never gets anything done. And they think they'd be safer with Hillary, who never gets anything done, than somebody who... I think it's poor logic, and I'm not advising anybody to think that. I mean, I don't want to advise anybody on electing anybody. Again, the only one that you can really do anything about is you and your psychosis. That there, you think you can't be free unless you fix government. But you see, it isn't the government that's taken away your freedom. And this is where we were going in the last show. And we were quoting, you know, everybody thinks lawmakers take away our freedom. And yet we know in Romans 7:14 that Paul says, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal." Well, your vote is carnal. It's not spiritual. It's a real vote. It votes for this guy, and you put that guy in a real cardinal position, and he does what he's going to do. And what he's going to do is what this predominant spirit of the people wants him to do. He's going to be overwhelmed by that spirit. And if the people are covetous, he will be covetous. If the people are zombies, he will be a zombie supporter. This is the way it's going to go. And there's not too much you can do about the rest of the world, but there is something you can do about you, and you can, because see, you right now, you're living of the world, and so that spirit can devour you. What you want to do is get to a state where you're no longer on that menu. Now, how do you do that? Well, that's what we're going to talk about when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom. We're going to take a brief break, and we're going to talk about how do you change the course of human events. How do you change so that you're actually moving towards freedom rather than more laws, more tyranny? And we'll talk about that when we come back after this brief break. So how does this all work, this idea of, creating entities that walk about doing what they want to and fro, these corporations, which includes governments. Governments are corporations, and then governments, of course, create corporations. They create agencies, which are really corporations. Some are private, some are public. We talked about different forms of the same law earlier, maritime law versus the law of the sea. Law of the sea is considered public law, while maritime law or admiralty law is considered private law. All these things exist within what the Greeks called nomos, which is law. And they all fell under that topic of law because they were created by contract, by agreement. There's a phrase, pacta servanda sunt, which is agreements must be kept, pact pacta agreements, pacts, must be kept. And I found that one of the most predominant phrases within literature concerning the United Nations. Because all nations know that that is essential, that agreements must be kept in order to maintain control and power and all that, that you have to keep your agreements. And these governments increase their power by the agreements they make with people, the contract with America. But it's an individual thing, because originally it didn't say taxation without representation. That's not what it says in the Declaration of Independence. People quote it all the time, but that's not what it says. It says taxation without consent, and consent is an individual thing. So how do they get the consent of the people? Well, the greatest destroyers of freedom are the givers of gifts, gratuities, and benefits. So you give lots of benefits, but you have strings attached to those benefits. You take the benefit you owe. And that girl who was talking about voting for Bernie, she was saying, don't worry about democratic socialism. That's around all the time. I mean, you like fire departments, right? You like the fact that somebody's going to come to your house and put out fires. Well, that's a socialist program. Fire departments. It's supported by the government, which she didn't go on to say this, which is supported by taking money away from your neighbor and by force and giving to the government, and the government starting the fire department. Well, the original fire departments in America were all volunteer fire departments. The fire department out here in the town where I live, that's a volunteer fire department. It's not supported by tax dollars. It's supported as a volunteer fire department. And that's you can have fire departments without forcing your neighbor to contribute to them at the point of a gun and threatening to take his home away if he doesn't pay into what you want for a fire department. Of course, you do the same thing with public school. Public schools is socialism. Social Security is socialism. You live in a socialist state already, so why not get a leader who advocates socialism? Well, of course, you can't be a Christian and a socialist. Now, I say that, and then all these people out here who depend on all these government programs, the fire department and the Social Security and welfare and all these things, many of them think they are Christians. They think they believe in Jesus. But if you believe in Jesus, you have to believe in the Ten Commandments. You cannot covet your neighbor's goods and tell me that you have eternal life with Jesus, because he said, if you want eternal life, you have to keep the commandments, and one of those commandments is thou shalt not covet. So you're out already. You don't really believe in Jesus if you believe in taking from your neighbor to get what you want. You're not following Jesus. You're not following Christ. If you're not following Christ, you're not a Christian, because a Christian, by definition, is someone who follows Christ, follows what he says, believes in what he says, believes in what he told us. And if you believe in socialism, you don't believe in Jesus. That's just the way it is. And we've done lots of programs on that. So once you accept that, but of course a lot of you can't accept that, but that's your psychosis again. That's your emotion and thoughts that are completely contrary to Christ, but you want it that way so that you can't see beyond that. You've created a wall. You cannot progress towards the kingdom of God as long as you accept the idea that it's okay to exercise authority one over the other to get the benefits you want. You cannot enter into the kingdom. There is no inheritance of the kingdom for you because you covet. And it tells you that in the Bible, but you want to think that taking those benefits is not coveting, but it is. That prohibition is there. And I've just the other day, a first prominent person actually came out and said that. I was just astonished. I forgot what his name is, a famous character. I think his name is Williams or something like that. But anyway, I say it all the time, so at least one guy named Williams is saying it all the time. But we need these social services. So what do you have to do? You have to come together and start volunteering and being there for one another. And you don't have to start a fire department to be a fire department. You get extra fire extinguishers. Maybe you get a water tank where you can carry it around. You practice. You know you get together with other people and you do what is necessary to help make your community safer from fires. And that's how it works. And you do the same in meats. And if your neighbor doesn't have a coat and you have two, then you share with them. And you create institutions that will help you do that and facilitate that. You don't give them the power to force you to contribute, but you give them the power to make sure that what is contributed gets to where it's going. As I gave examples many times before of how we collected a bunch of food and clothing and everything and took them down to a community that was burnt out. And we got the food that night, because they were just running out that night, to a kitchen that was preparing food for all kinds of people. We got the clothes right there that day, that night, and started distributing it where it was needed the most. It was well organized. Meanwhile, other people went through the government and the Forest Service, and they collected all kinds of stuff, and they piled up a big truck, and somebody drove it down, and it got stuck in a warehouse 40, 50 miles away, and none of it ever got to where it could do any good. But everybody felt good. They gave, and that was it. But they didn't, there was no accountability. Well, with the early church, there's accountability. Did it get to where it was going? And in order to do that well, you have to have a network where people are overseeing and looking and testifying one of another and functioning. But to do it as the church, you have to do it all voluntary. It has to be all volunteer actions, volunteer offerings, volunteer support. And this is what Christ was creating. This was another form of government. And he did it just in the nick of time, because we saw the Roman government falling apart almost immediately. I mean, it was already, you know, the handwriting was on the wall, but it got very clear that it was going to absolutely decay and fall apart. And right away, I mean, you had Augustus when Jesus was born, Tiberius when he was crucified. And Tiberius died, and then we had Caligula and Claudius and eventually Nero, and all in a fairly short period of time. They didn't last as long as Augustus had, but they started taking the silver out of the coin. They started having inflation. They started having famines right away. We see where the apostles had to take up collections and move funds and purchase grain to go and feed Christians in other areas. Why? Well, the government of the world was doing the same thing, but Christians had to do it for themselves, because they could not avail themselves of the offerings and the contributions of benefactors who exercised authority. They had to do it this other way, this way based on the perfect law of liberty. And this created a network all across the Roman Empire of people who naturally gave, naturally cared, naturally helped one another, naturally created offices of service. We just this week we put up another web page on the offices. What does it mean to have an office? And of course, that's a little bit like a person that we mentioned earlier in this show. Is an office. And we see the word officer often mentioned in the Bible, in the New Testament. And it's usually, whenever you see that, they're talking about an officer of the governments of the world. You know, officers of Rome, officers of Herod. But the same exact word is applied to apostles and to the ministers of the church. But whenever they apply it to the ministers of the church, they don't usually translate it office or officer. They translate it servant or minister. But it's the same word. But they translate it differently. And the bad thing about that is somehow or other you begin to think that Jesus Christ did not appoint a government with offices and ministers who were providing a daily ministration by faith, hope, and charity. I don't know, Cheryl, were you trying to say something, or is that, is somebody's mic open? Okay. I didn't want to interrupt you if you were trying to get the conversation. Anyway, so once we understand that he's actually talking about a government, how does it work? And we got a little bit left in the show. We'll talk about how it works. And again, go back to Paul. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. Then he goes on, for the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus hath made me free from the law of sin and death. And he goes on in verse 4, that the righteous of the law might be fulfilled, the righteousness of the law might be fulfilled in us who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. So he's telling us something there. And again, earlier in this series, I talked about the fact that everything in creation is originally spirit. The Spirit giveth life. Spirit breathed upon the waters, and there was life. And that breathing is the Spirit, was pneumos. That is what gives life to the institutions. You know, when we're supposed to preach the kingdom to all creatures. Well, that word creatures is also the word for institutions. We're supposed to breathe the Spirit of God into all of our institutions. It's not that institutions are wrong. It's that we're not always breathing the Spirit of God, which is the giver of life, into our institutions. So therefore, we create institutions that are into take, which you can see in the pharmaceutical institutions. The idea, supposedly, in pharmaceutical medical things is to help take care of people, but the motivation has become profit, and it produces a different result. It's giving you pharmaceuticals that are killing people and making people dependent upon them. It's because of the Spirit that's being breathed into those institutions. And it's the same way with your GMOs and all these things. You know, I did research in hormone displacement and made plants grow twice as big, but we didn't genetically engineer them, and we didn't use chemical hormones. And that's doable. It's not really necessarily practical in most cases, but there could be a time when it could be a practical use. It's just a way of feeding the plant. You don't want to do it forever because it makes the plant dependent. You want to strengthen the plant. It's like if you grow a tree in a greenhouse, you have to add wind, because without wind, the tree will grow up and then just fall over because it won't be strong. So you have to create some stress to strengthen the plant, but not so much that it slows its growth. So anyway, that's all understanding that. Let's apply that to people and nations. That people need stress in order to grow. If you take away all the stress, you know, that same girl was saying that we have a right to education. We have a right to health care. No, you don't. You have the right to pursue happiness. If you don't pursue happiness, you will be like that tree that grows up in the greenhouse without any wind. You won't be strong enough to stand on your own. You need the struggle. You need to strive. I mean, this is nature. You don't have to believe in religion. You just look out in nature. It will tell you that. That you need that. You need to create a government where people have to seek their own happiness. And in order for that government to really remain free, they have to be equally seek the happiness of others. Not so that they weaken others, but so that they strengthen them. Because it's your spirit that gives rise to the creation of the world around you. Whatever spirit you are breathing in to your family, into your community, that spirit is the way that community is going to become. So if you breathe the spirit of covetousness, you want, you want, you want. I gave an example when we were going through the myths of how a fairly decent organization was telling a lot of things that are happened to be true, but when it came down to their mission, they were saying that you had to be motivated to get your freedom, your possessions, your stuff. And I'm telling you, that motivation is inadequate. That's not going to give you the right spirit. You need the right spirit to strengthen your nation, your society, your community. And that spirit is Christ's spirit. Christ didn't come to get his stuff. Christ didn't come to save his life. Christ didn't come to serve himself, but to serve others. And see, when you put on that character of Christ and seek that character of Christ and that righteousness of Christ, you're going to get a different result, a different institution in your society. Whatever institutions you create, they're going to go a particular way. Most people think, well, we create the institution with these rules, and we will make good things come about. Because they believe that the means justifies the end. Or the end justifies the means. They actually think that by changing the reality and the circumstance, we change the spirit of things. And the reality is, when we change the spirit of things, we change the physical world around us. Now, there's actually this is a process, so you do one, then the other takes place, and then you do another one, and another takes place. And so what you do is it's a step-by-step process where you begin to take responsibility for your life, for your family's life. And then something will take place. Something will change. Your eyes will be open. Now you will see that I also have to take responsibility for my neighbor, my brother. I have to care about them. I can't covet their goods. I have to become a benefactor to them when they really need help, only when they really need help that will strengthen them. I have to become like that. And then another situation will be created around you. Another environment will be created around you. Another spirit will begin to inhabit the institutions that already existed before you. This is what happened in Egypt. People thought that the miracle were all the things that happened, you know, the disasters and all that stuff, water turning red and all this stuff. No, the miracle was that people started caring about one another in a socialist state in the middle of hard times. That is a miracle. And that's the miracle that you need to seek. You need to start seeking a community, a society that provides for one another, even in hard times. You have to create a society that cares about its neighbor as much as it cares about itself. And the only way you can do that is you must first start to care about your neighbor as much as you care about yourself. And that sets in motion the possibility of your neighbor caring back. But you can't force it. And so what the people who think that way will start to draw together. And the people who don't think that way will repel. And society will begin to change, because God is now writing upon your hearts and your mind the character of Christ. But that isn't what has happened up to this point in society. We've been going the other way. We've been taking step by step. First, you know, we get a fire department, we get a police department, and that will keep us safe from fire and criminals, and we will pay for that by taking away from our neighbor. We will do this by do the same thing with education. We will put a tax on the homes. And if you don't pay the tax, we'll take your house away from you. But if you do pay the tax, then you get to send your kids to school for free. The problem is that you have breathed a certain spirit of unrighteousness in your institution. By not depending on faith, hope, and charity, but by force, now you've created an institution of force. Which I've shared a video where the father was complaining about the books that they were having his 14-year-old daughter read, and he had really done nothing, and they had him arrested and put in jail. This guy's an attorney. He went, you know, like 60 seconds over his 2-minute allotted time, and they had him arrested and thrown into jail. And the whole lesson of the reason why they were putting this smutty book into the school, into the hands of a 14-year-old, was to teach about bullying. Believe it or not, they were trying to give them lessons in bullying. And the father of one of the students speaks 60 seconds over his allotted time, and they have him arrested. You want to talk about bullies? And they didn't see this. You see, because they have a wall up. It's a wall of self-righteousness. But that's their psychosis. You see? See how it works? They can't see it. I mean, you go out and look at the election. I don't care what side you're on, you know, Truman or Truman, Trump, or it's kind of like the Truman Show. You know, it's all made up. It's all a show. It's all fake. It's a dog and pony show. But you go look at these different people and you see they can't see this and they can't see that. And everybody picks their psychosis. That's the only choice you have out there in the world, is your psychosis. But if you pick the Spirit of Christ, your eyes will suddenly be open. But if you think you know it all already, your eyes will remain closed. I mean, this is what Jesus is telling you. But if you be led by the Spirit of Christ, ye are not under the law. You will not be subject to their projections of reality. You will begin to see reality as it really is. And you also have power flowing through you. This is where the healing powers of the apostles came from, as they began to see the truth. Most of the people reading the Bible don't see the truth. So you see bits and pieces of it, but they can't see around their walls. And one of the biggest walls is that somehow or other modern Christians think it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods as long as you do it through government. And if you say anything about government, they say, oh, we have to obey the government. But do you have to covet your neighbor's goods? Do you have to pray to the government to be the benefactors who exercise authority? Why don't you go to church if you have need or help? Well, the church doesn't do that anymore. It used to, not very long ago. But now only government does that, because that's the new religion. That's your faith. And it keeps you blind. And you think you don't see where your freedom really lies. So you are susceptible to accepting all these patriot myths. I could have gone through another 20 or 30 that I went through in the shows this morning. But you'll just have to wait till they come out on our network. So until then, that's what I would suggest. Everybody join the Living Network. Go to our website, preparingyou.com or hisholychurch.org or .net, and join the network. Get to know people in your local areas and start seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Start learning what it really means to be led by the Spirit. And start changing the world by being the change that we need to be. Until then, may peace be upon your house. And may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.